Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturer of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com. Welcome to another episode of Knife Talk. Now, today I'll be chatting with, well, the godfather of making. It's Mr. Jimmy DiResta. How are you, Jimmy?
Hello. I'm great, man. Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Before we start, I just need to say that I put up this little Instagram story just last week, just saying that you're going to be chatting on the show. And I received dozens, well, probably 40 to 50 messages from people
really?
Saying how inspired they were by you and that this is, you got them making, you know?
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that's really nice. So if they're listening now, thank you very much.
That's some influence you've got.
Thank you. Well, I've been at it for a while. And like I tell everybody, if you're going to try and be successful in this game, you got to make interesting content. I mean, they can't all be winners, of course, but you really got to work hard at trying to make good content, and you know, you can't fool yourself.
Exactly.
A lot of guys come to me and they go, oh, how come my channel's not taking off? And you know, usually the answer is because you talk too much. That's usually the answer. You don't have to be dead silent like I started out as, but sometimes you just have to shut your mouth and make things more.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my blanket advice to new YouTubers. Shut up.
So I know that you don't really make knives for a living, obviously, but there is definitely more knife-related content from you lately. So is that you to demand, you know, because it's on trend now, or is it just something that you really enjoy doing?
Probably a little of both. You know, I am constantly wanting to learn new things, and woodworking is something that is where I started, and then I got into metalworking, and I'm still learning everything, of course. But when I see knife making, I say, oh, cool. I can just take this piece of blank and turn it into any shape I want. Because I work in a reductive style. That's how I started. Mm. So I'll take a piece of, you know, a piece of tool steel, turn it into a knife, shape it from where I start. And then the natural progression is, hey, let me take any piece of metal I want and any chunk of tool steel and then turn it into the shape I want. It doesn't necessarily have to already be like 90% there in the flat. Mm. And so the progression is, start shaping and then really start shaping with blacksmithing. And all the while, I'm just learning so many techniques that I could just apply to everything. So knife making, it's almost like doing yoga just to have like an overall healthy experience. So knife making for me is just like a kind of a way of meditating and blacksmithing as well. Just meditating and problem solving, that's just going to apply to everything I do on an ongoing basis. And I do plan on getting better at it and to the point where I ultimately will feel confident enough to sell somebody a knife that I know is going to keep an edge. You know, I always end my videos with me shaving my arm. And of course, you know, I'm not the best hardener or know the best about the metallurgy of the whole process. So, you know, sometimes those blades don't stay too sharp. Sometimes they do, you know, I get lucky.
But yeah, it's all down to the heat treat, isn't it? All the heat treat. So your product is content, you know, not necessarily the thing that you make on the screen.
Right.
So was that a conscious decision or did it just sort of work out that way?
It started working out that way in time. I mean, you'll notice in my videos, several of the videos that I make, for instance, lately I made the two big number sevens. Those are a very well-paying product, but I take the opportunity to make a video to show a lot of bending and sheet metal work. And I get to play with my new tools that I make. So it varies. Sometimes it's just about, like, I just made that big giant knife. I forget what the name of the video is. So I think a spring steel knife from
Yeah, it's the
steel.
Big thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I started that in November. And I don't know if you know Brett, my shop assistant, and he's been hanging around the shop now for over a year. And Brett's a very enthusiastic blacksmith and he's learning and he's pushing me. So having Brett around is a little bit of a muse for me because I don't think I would be hitting it as hard as I would if he wasn't there. I'd be a little bit lazy. Also, I use laziness as an excuse because I get a little intimidated. And in the case of this knife, I started shaping it with blacksmithing, and I really felt a sense of reward because I really was getting somewhere. And I was gonna take it over to the bandsaw and cut the end off. And Brett's like, no, chop it off with the cutter. You know, let's heat it up. We can, you know, do a two-man operation. We'll just chop it off. And so that was kind of cool because, you know, it takes you back to like how the problem solving would have happened years before there were bandsaws available in everyone's blacksmithing shop. And then I was able to take that and hammer it and shape it. And then I got to a point where I stood back and I looked at the grind and I wasn't so happy with the shape. It was a little awkward. But then again, I wasn't going for anything practical from the start. So after some time, Brett made this big tube to heat treat in his knife. Brett just made a big sword that he's going to publish in a couple of days. So he made this big tube of oil and he goes, look, we got a big enough thing now we can heat treat it. He goes, let's just get to the getting. So he kind of pushed me to heat treat that knife and finish it. And this making the scales was obviously the next thing right after the heat treat. And we had some fun with it. Once it was done, we did the big cut where I cut a burrito in half, and we were just goofing off. But somebody asked me my philosophy on knife making, and it's basically I like making the knives that I wanted when I was 10 years old. So that's the knives I make.
That's a good way to think of it. Yeah, yeah.
Big Bugs Bunny knives. That's what I said.
So I mean, you just mentioned making scales, and to me, that's the bit that scares the most. That scares me the most when I'm making a knife. It's the handle material, because generally cutting scales out of big lumps of wood, you know, it just scares the shit out of me. You know, using a table saw.
It's funny because for me, that's the easiest part. I could make any kind of, I mean, I've seen some incredible knives, like Greg Sims. I don't know if you know Greg Sims Knife Works.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I met him, and he lives in the vicinity of where I am. He's about 70 miles from me. And so where I bought my power hammer, that's how I met him. I bought my power hammer in Fletcher Coddington shop, who I did a little doc on him. Fletcher's an amazing, like, he's like old school. Like you mentioned Fletcher and you mentioned Wally Ader, and like, everyone's like, oh, I know those guys. You know those guys? You've met them? You know, it's kind of like around the blacksmithing guys here in America. And so when I met Fletcher, I went and bought my power hammer off of eBay just randomly. And I went there and I made a deal and I ended up picking up the hammer, and Greg was working in the shop. He rents a little section. So I became friendly with him. And then now on Instagram, he's sending me bits of encouragement from time to time. Like, he'll see me working and he'll give me some tips right through the Instagram direct messaging. And he's always on point. You know, he's amazing. But when you see the knife handles he makes, I mean, the knives are incredible, but the knife handles he makes with like multiple pieces of different colored materials, it's such an inspiration to me, you know. But that's a part I'm not nearly as intimidated by, is shaping and grinding. And I mean, when I see what Liam Hoffman does, he's a magician. He's a magician. I don't even understand how he gets those grinds, those like beautiful hollow grinds. If I got a hollow grind like that, I would be like, wow, I'll never be able to do that twice.
Hmm. He's been on the show too, and he's a lovely guy. Lovely guy.
No, we chatted a little bit. I pushed his book for him, and we were actually going to do a project together. I developed and designed this aluminum handle. It was one of my videos, but I was able to duplicate the handle, or I was about to duplicate the handle with a CNC manufacturer, and it never worked out. And Liam was going to make the heads, and we were going to do like a three-way YouTube thing. Hmm. It could still work out, but anytime we do YouTube collaborations, they're very logistically difficult to keep up and stay on top of. And, you know, because everyone's got so many other priority things that are important, like, you know, your daily uploads or whatever it is.
Yes.
So
yeah, I can imagine.
It's kind of hard. But at least I got to break the ice with Liam and become friendly with him through email. And we had one phone conversation. And, man, what a talented guy. I mean, I've been blowing him up since I met him.
Yeah. And young, too. Young. It's crazy.
Yeah. Amazing.
So you just mentioned your power hammer. And I know you've just been on a power hammer course, haven't you? So
I just got home.
Have you got any special knife builds you're building up to?
No, you know, just the idea of drawing and just taking, well, in that class, you'll see when I upload the vlog, which I haven't even made yet, but I started playing around with, it's funny, the class was like a little crowded. And I met a good friend there, my buddy, Andrew. He's like one of my new best friends, Andrew Alexander, who owns Blacksmith Tools on Instagram.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Have you got followed him?
He sells old anvils, that kind of thing, doesn't he?
Yeah, anvils and power hammers, and he is a wealth of knowledge. So he wanted to go picking. So a couple of times we went driving around and gone picking, and we just driving, like, you see a guy who's got a crowded lot of junk on his, and we just go right up and knock on the door. Andrew breaks the ice, and we start talking, and the guy lets us look through his junk, and we buy here and there. So we did one of those one afternoon, and I ended up buying four railroad spikes from a guy. He basically just said, take them. So I got these four railroad spikes out of this junkyard, and I took them back to the place. And I said, let me just throw them in the heat and play with drawing them on the power hammer. That's all. I'm just going to try and draw them. That's it. I have no idea how to do this. I've never done it before. I never used a power hammer. Mine isn't operational yet, but it will be now that I'm back. I'm making it my priority to get that thing working. And I'll explain in a minute what it needs. It doesn't need much. So anyway, I was drawing out those railroad spikes, and I started just goofing off because everybody knows I make like ice picks. So I drew them out, and I ended up making these long, and somebody picked it up and goes, who made the wizard wand? Because I had it sitting there cooling off. And I'm like, great name. That's it. They're wizard sticks, wizard spikes. So everyone was joking, like, who made the Harry Potter wands? And because I like experimenting with twists, I did a little cube twist on one, and I did a zigzag twist where I got halfway and then back and then back and back. So I made three of them, and I'm going to start right away. Everyone's like, oh, eBay them. So I'm going to eBay them. So they're not really a knife. They're more of like it's like a shish kebab, basically.
Hmm. But yeah, the good introduction to the hammer. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a great introduction to the hammer for me. And so I'm looking forward to making more of those because they were a lot of fun. And I, whenever I do any kind of YouTube or anything, for me, one of the most important parts of the entire concept is the transformation, starting with a lump of steel or a flat blank, taking that flat blank and turning it into whatever else it might become.
Hmm, yeah, always looks great on cam. And what you need, obviously, is the slow panning, slow mo sparks going every Alex Steele style, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just filmed. Brent Bailey was our teacher, who's an amazing craftsman and obviously an amazing guy. So I did some slow mo iPhone shots of him, and they look like Hollywood produced.
Yeah,
they just look so cool.
So this new shop of yours, which I've followed along with the build, and it's just the dream shop. It looks incredible. Is that now?
Oh yeah.
Is it fully functional?
No. Far from it. I was kind of waiting. I'm kind of stalling. I'm kind of waiting on a couple of trade outs. I have an electrical company that might become a partner with me on it. You know, I would basically, they would supply the product and I would blow them up on YouTube and hang a banner in the shop. And so I'm waiting on some confirmation with them. I have a siding company. I just got, I'm going to put a down payment on my windows this week, which I'm just paying for. So I'm trying to do some trade outs. I'm taking a little bit of a slow approach. And on top of that, which is my better excuse, it has been so cold and freezing here.
Oh, and yes.
The ground goes from being frozen solid to being completely muddy. And it's really difficult. So my excavator guy said, we really have to wait until April till we can get driving trucks on the ground, because I have to dig a 350-foot trench for the electric.
Yeah, rather you than me.
Yeah.
So yep. What's the intention of that space? Is that going to change the way you work, do you think?
That is going to be my curated shop. That is going to be the shop where I'll basically spend the rest of my life, presumably. So I am going to build beautiful cabinets. Up until now, I never really owned anything. So I was always kind of half-heartedly building out the walls and half-heartedly doing the organization. Because I know on a whim, I'm going to spend all this money to, you know, do a whole cubbyhole wall, and then I'm going to have to leave. And that's why in the city, I moved into the place 14 years ago, and slowly it turned into what it did. And it was comfortable, and I knew where everything was. And then I had to leave, and then I moved into this warehouse, which I was planning on being for only 1 year. And now that 1 year is up this month, and I'm nowhere near being able to move out. And the rent's so cheap, I'm going to keep it anyway. I talked to the landlord. He's like, stay as long as you want. I don't care, because I'm a good tenant to him. Hmm. And so the warehouse is cheap. I'm going to stay in that warehouse and curate my place here. Because with that warehouse, I can on a whim buy like an antique printer. But this place is half the size as my warehouse. The new built shop is half as big as my warehouse, my ratty warehouse.
Right. Geez.
So I won't be able to keep as much stuff all inside of there. So I am going to still have a supplemental place, considering the amount of stuff I collect.
Yes. You know,
if I wasn't a collector, it wouldn't matter. I'd just be like a regular wood shoppy metal guy. But I mean, I have a love for old tools like blacksmith tools. The Instagram guy who's got 10 or 20, I forget what he said, 20,000 square feet undercover to collect big machines and stuff. Yeah. And that's what I want. And I want to be able to drive down the road and pick up a power hammer here or a giant lathe there and have a place to.
So. That's the dream. Ooh. That's the dream. I remember when you were looking for new shops, I remember you posted these pictures of an old gas station. Man, yep. that was a beauty, that was, wasn't it?
Oh, it was beautiful. And it's extremely small, so it's actually worked out good that I didn't get it, because I would have had no space for all the stuff I need.
Right, yeah.
But I just drove by it this afternoon, and I'm thinking, God, I know the guy passed on, the guy that I was dealing with a year ago, so I want to know if his wife is interested in selling the place. The guy, when I met the guy that owned it, he had one foot in the grave and one on a banana peel. I mean, the guy was not healthy at all. In fact, I met him several times to discuss the rental and the fixing up of the place. And every single time I met him, he never got out of his car.
Jeez.
He just, I talked to him through the window of his car, because he just wasn't in good health. And so that could become available again. And that might be just another part of the empire up here taking over this upstate neighborhood. Yeah. Who knows?
The Duresta Diner.
Yeah, it would be great. I would really get it to have it as like a curated like gathering space and maybe an art gallery for Taylor's work or something.
Yeah. Now may be a good time to tell you about a campaign that I'm running to get my beautiful steak knives into production. A great steak deserves a great steak knife. Take a look at the campaign at chopknives.com and grab yourself one of my steak knives whilst they are more affordable than they'll ever be. So, I mean, you've got way over a million subscribers on YouTube now. So, you know, that's big time.
1.2, yeah. No, it's amazing. I never dreamed I'd get this far. I never dreamed. I started making YouTube videos because I was mad at the TV business, and it just kept growing. And then I realized this is I found my community, really.
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, you talk about TV. I don't think there's really a show out there for makers. Well, certainly not for me. That nails it for me, you know? I enjoy, Forged in Fire, I enjoy. But you don't really learn much from it. It's just a bit of fun. So I think TV is really missing out on what YouTube is now providing, really.
It's funny. Because we were all at it's called the Moccasin Mountain Power Hammer event. And he's going to try and do it 4 times a year. And we were held up in a cabin, the owner of the event. And the owner of the property, Al, owns 4 cabins, and each cabin I think has 4 beds in them. And so there was 4 of us in the cabin, and each night we'd turn the TV on for a minute before we all decided to hit the hay. And the other night, Forge and Fire was on, so all 4 of us were skeptically watching Forge and Fire and like ridiculing everything. And just the idea that like people tell me all the time, they're like, "Oh, go on Forge and Fire." A, it's not my choice. It's not something you just call up and say, "I'm available now for Forge and Fire." You have to be invited on. And I wouldn't go on because I would not want to be on a competition show. I heard we discussed the show at the breakfast the next day with some of the guys, and somebody said Walter Sorrells was on.
He was,
got booted the first round, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's why those shows aren't good. I mean, if you got 4 good knife makers together to spend, if the show's an hour long, an hour discussing their techniques, how they do it. So you bring 4 people together with 4 separate approaches. They all combine their conversation and their experience. That's a better show than you get kicked off, you stay, you go. The guy's got a lifetime's worth of experience and wealth of knowledge, and they cut him because maybe he just had a bad moment, or he got a bad piece of metal out of the junk pile, or he's not used to working in 20 minutes for something that looks like a masterpiece that would take him maybe 2 hours, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it.
The shows are very unfair, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it. They did an international version, and Trotsky was on there. And
no kidding. See, I don't have a TV, so I don't get to see any of the stuff unless I'm in a hotel.
Ah, right. Yeah, he was on there. And again, he didn't win. But what I did notice with that show is that they all become very friendly. And I know he's working with the other guys now on a few products, that kind of thing. So I think it does happen. But yeah, the way it's set up, it's designed to have a winner, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what they believe is needed. And I've told this story several times. I went to pitch a TV show with my friend Nick Offerman, the actor comedian in America, Ron Swanson. And when we went into all these different meetings, his agent, who was representing me and him at the time for this pitch, looked at me and goes, "Don't talk about YouTube. None of these networks are having a fun time with YouTube. So just don't bring it up." And it's funny, every time I walked into because of Nick's influence and his agent's influence, we had like 8 meetings in 2 days with every major network. And everybody we met, the very first thing, they shake my hand, they go, "Hey man, I watched all your YouTube videos, really good stuff." Which was great for me, because here's the agent saying they don't want to hear about it. And meanwhile, they're all looking out of there. They're all side-eyeing YouTube, wondering what's next. You know?
So what's your contingency plan if YouTube decides to sort of squeeze content makers further? You know, what's the plan?
Well, it's funny. All my analytics have been way down in the last 6 months. Every once in a while, I get green arrows, but for the most part, my arrows are always red. And I think it has something to do with the algorithm. Maybe it has to do with my move. Maybe it has to do with me being a little bit more, commercially open to commercial advertising, because I need the money, of course.
Yeah. It's a job.
And people are offering me the money. And when I first started doing YouTube, I'd spend 70% of my time building stuff for clients, sitting in traffic, installing stuff in apartments in uptown New York City with Dave Welder. And every once in a while, I'd make a YouTube video. And then as time went on, I started making more YouTube videos, and I was getting some money from that product placement. Then by popular demand, I started doing my vlogs. And I think if I was adding thousands of subscribers per day when I started doing my vlogs, it went down to like hundreds of subscribers a day again. But it still continues to grow. It's like the stock market, it's like an annuity. It just continues to grow, but the rate of growth slows down from time to time. And I saw a big slowdown when I started doing my vlogs, because a lot of people are like, "Why are you talking?" But now I'm so deep into it that I can't stop doing my vlogs, because people look forward to that.
Yeah, I enjoy them more, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, I meet people in airports and they say, "I only watch your vlogs. I love your build videos, but I get a little bit of that in the vlog." And so I kind of pay attention to see when the vlogs are posted. That's really what I watch. And, of course, I get people that say, "I only watch your build videos. I know you do those things where you talk once in a while. That's cool, but I really like when you make stuff." So And I get badgered to do a second channel, but that's just too much work, and it just doesn't pay. And you know, it's like that's if you come into my environment is that YouTube channel, and you'll see everything in my environment. It's my build videos and my vlog videos.
It's all so together. Look
at the growth. It took me 1 year to get 500,000 subscribers to hit 1 million, and it took me the next 1 year, which is right now, to do 200,000 subscribers. So it just shows you the difference in growth.
Yes,
so
yeah.
So 1 year I did 500,000, and the next year, which is May 1st, will be the next year, I'll hit 200,000. So, you know, it's ebbs and flows, you know. And the good thing about what I do is I could always hold a class like Moccasin Mountain Power Hammers. We're going to do one with Rory May in the fall. And I'm going to hold a spoon making class. I'm going to hold a YouTube video making class as well this summer. So those are goals of mine, is to host these classes, which can be pretty lucrative. Mm. And it's not always going to be all about me, although I'll be the host, but I always like to get experts in to be like this weekend. Brent Bailey was the teacher, not the owner of the event, but he hosted, and he has all the power hammers and the space and the places to keep people in beds. But he had Brent Bailey be the instructor, and it was great to really watch an expert like him.
Cool.
You know, whack around a piece of metal.
Yeah, I mean, you strike me as the type of person that never really chills out in front of the TV, or you know, falls asleep with a beer in your hand. So what do you do to relax?
I like to drive. Honestly, I know I drive everywhere in America when it's time. Like tomorrow, I'm driving about 4 hours away to go to Carolina Boots factory. I'm now going to be working with Carolina Boots. I'm going to be making some products for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to drive, and I like driving. It's a place for me to kind of think and collect my thoughts, because I can't look at the phone. I can't be distracted by Instagram or YouTube. And I'll keep a yellow pad next to me, and I'll jot down concepts as I drive. And when I get home or get to my destination, I'll be able to make sense of those jittery notes that I write while I'm driving. I enjoy tinkering. I really like tinkering, and the power hammer is a great tinker. I got the power hammer in pieces. It came as the big main body with the pulleys on it, but the hammer and all the spring and the arms were not on. They were all dismantled in preparation for restoration about 25, 30 years ago. That never happened. And it got handed down from one person to another person, all in pieces. And the boxes that the parts are in were like bins from like the 70s that just never got transferred into any new bins. And so when I got the power hammer, I was like, okay, this is now my responsibility to resurrect this piece of history. And I spent last summer machining all the parts and getting everything bushed. Everything needed new bushings. That was the problem. It was too much slack. I don't know how easy it is to find parts for that DuPont, but it's not. It's a DuPont Fairbanks. And so all the parts would either be rebushed or remade. And so I rebushed all the worn out parts with I think it was aluminum bronze. I machined all the sleeves, and we made new pins, I think at a 1095 or 1045 rod. I forget exactly. And so now it's operational. The next step is to put the motor and the belt on. And I've been kind of stalling on that because it's a complicated build, because it all has to be 8 to 9 feet above it in the air, not above the actual hammer, but ultimately everything is going to live above like the 3 feet above the hammer, all that mechanical. And I don't know if I should build a cage around it, which means the cage and the thing have to move independently when I finally get it settled, or build something onto the power hammer, which you have to do. I want to make sure I do an elegant design and construction, because the machine is so beautiful. I don't want to just slap steel tube together and just kind of make a haphazard job. So I got a much better idea, because there was a Fairbanks there among the power hammers this weekend, and I saw how he did it. And so sitting in my layover between Minnesota and New York, we had a 4-hour layover. I sat there and I went on McMaster, and I spent over $1,000 on McMaster car for all the parts that I need. The pulleys, the shafting, the belting, and I got everything I need. So now I have no excuse. It's all showing up this week. I'm going to have everything sitting on my porch, and I'm going to be able to really start. So by the spring, I think probably by summer, I'm going to have that thing hammering.
So the answer is no, you don't relax.
No. What I do relax is tinker. And that's it. Like when I don't have jobs that I do, or if I'm like in between YouTube videos and I'm trying to tinker to come up with an idea for a good video, I'll tinker. And that's what I really like doing.
Let's talk about one of our sponsors, Tormach. To get great razor sharp and repeatable edges, you're going to need a Tormach. To find out more, go to tormek.com, which is T-O-R-M-E-K.com. Okay, let's get back to the show. Cool. So I'm going to finish the interview with the same question that I ask everybody, which is, which makers inspire you? Who do you enjoy watching? Whose work do you love?
Wow. I mean, this is a stupid answer. I love everybody. I get inspired by the novice that puts up his first video because I love his enthusiasm and I'm like, you know, I'm rooting for them. Hmm. I get inspired, I say, from like real makers. I love Matthias. You know, Matthias is like everyone's YouTube hero. Hmm. Frank Haworth, Walter Sorrells, the knife maker. Another big inspiration of mine, he's only on social media, and a lot of people have heard me say this in the past, is Paul Cox, who's a motorcycle builder here in New York. He used to be a big shot on the Discovery Channel motorcycle shows when they had them.
Yeah.
He's still a big shot, but he's just not, he's not extremely media savvy. Like, he doesn't have YouTube, or he does amazing, classic, beautiful. Like, I like when people are technically skilled and also have a sense of style. And it's really hard to find both of those. You either have a sense of style and you got to hire somebody that could fab for you, or you can fab but you have no sense of style. Mm. And someone like Paul Cox has both of those immensely. And to see that inspires me. Like, I see some incredibly skilled knife makers, but I would never want to make a knife that looks like they do. I know the thing is going to hold the razor's edge forever. It's made out of the best steel. It's got the most beautiful swirls in it because they know how to do Damascus. But the style is hideous. And that's just me personally. So
yeah. I
like the combination of it all coming together under one roof. And that's some of the things I aspire to be, is a good fabricator and a good designer, and knowing how to handle materials and knowing how to get the best out of them as far as styling and technicality. You know, that's what someone like Paul Cox does for me. Walter Sorrells does that for me. Rory May makes some incredible stuff as far as blacksmithing goes, you know, as far as architectural elements. I mean, the stair rails him and his father make are like incredible. And when I see, like, I was in his shop and I saw the samples on the wall, and every one of them is just incredible. I'm like, whoa. I mean, to be able to like poke and bend and twist steel, you know, linearly, ongoing, so they all look the same, all handmade.
Hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So is there anything that you struggle with? I mean, something that you've always wanted to make, but you've always been maybe a bit daunted to do? Or are you the kind of guy who just, let's just give it a go?
I like just jumping in and giving everything a try. I mean, I would like to be better at CNC machining. I'm having a little bit of trouble with fusion. So when I have trouble with something, I kind of tend to like circumvent it and figure out other ways of doing anything. So I really do need to confront my Fusion 360 and my CAM learning. I did go to a couple classes over at NYCNC in Zanesville, Ohio. And at the moment I was really like, I was into it. I was able to sit in the class and go out in the shop and execute. But then when I'm on my own, I get nervous and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm making the right choice. Is this the right cutting head? Is this the right chip load? So all that stuff. I just need to spend more time with an expert and get more of that rub off from an experienced machinist. And that's partly why I travel a lot, is to like to try and meet people that know how to do something better than I know I'm good at, you know.
Well, you've got great knife makers on your doorstep. So you're still New York area, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, you know the guy, Brooklyn Cut? I just found out he lives down the block from me.
Oh, Joel, yes, yeah.
Yeah, in this like little rinky-dink town I'm in right now. I'm in this like little rinky-dink podunk town. I bought this house here 14 years ago, just as like a weird vacation spot from a family relative. And I saw Joel posting, like, I'm like, wait a minute. I go, dude, you're in East Durham? I go, I'm right down the block from you. Let's hang out. And he hasn't answered me back yet. Maybe he's just not big on Instagram.
I think, yeah, I've been trying to get him on the show, and there's, yeah, no responses. But, yeah, some people aren't all over everything, are they? But,
yeah.
I mean, you've got, I mean, we've had people on this. Jeff Vader, he's New York area. He used to be a sculptor. He now makes these beautiful, beautiful knives. Mariko Momassi, who from Momassi Fire Arts, he was actually the apprentice of Bob Kramer.
I don't know any of these guys.
He makes these incredible. I'll send you an email with people you need to be following. Oh, yeah. Because these are amazing knife makers, you know.
Thank you. Like I said, I have a pretty good confidence level with making like sexy shapes. Hmm. You know, of course, I don't always hit the mark. Like I said, that last big giant ugly knife I made, I really had a very different vision of that Bowie knife And then I kind of put that curve in it, and I was like, oh, this is a nice direction. And then I kind of snubbed the nose, and I looked at him like, it's kind of a little awkward looking. But I went with it anyway, and I finished it. And, you know, sometimes I get to a point when I build something, and I was like, you know what? This is just for experience right now. I'm building a foundation. So let me see it through to the end and then correct it on the next build. You know, correct whatever's bugging me on the next build.
Yeah, I've got a rule of doing that. I've always finishing what I start because, you're going to learn, aren't you? You're going to learn.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Jimmy. Hopefully we'll get you on the show again soon.
Anytime.
But yeah, have a great day, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Right on. And just send me messages when this is about to go up, and I'll blow you up too.
Excellent stuff.